This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
Here are your closing grain futures quotes from the Chicago Board of Trade. March corn was 427.5, down 4.5. May corn, 434, down 4. July corn, 439.25, down 4. March soybeans were 1269.25, down 16.25. May soybeans, 1256.75, down 14.25. July soybeans, 1242.5, down 14. March wheat was 551.5, down 14.5. May wheat, 556, down 15.75. July wheat, 559.5, down 17. Now time for your cash grain report from the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
Thank you. I'm Bob Reese, and this is Wednesday's report of the grain prices trends prepared by the USDA and the Illinois Department of Agriculture. Illinois country grain prices were lower on Wednesday afternoon. With Brazilian soybeans on a ship on its way to China, soybeans plunged downward. Wheat slid downwards on technical trading and substantial world supply. Corn tried to stay steady but was pressured by wheat and soybeans. In the northern and western part of the state, country grain dealers quoted shell corn bids 1 to 8 cents lower at 401 to 426. Soybeans were 17 cents lower at 1230 to 1262. In central Illinois, country grain dealers quoted shell corn bids 4 cents lower at 420 to 425. Soybean bids were 18 to 19 cents lower at 1256 to 1278. And in the southern part of the state, shell corn bids were 4 cents lower at 405 to 428. Soybean bids were 16 cents lower at 1266 to 1297. And wheat bids were 14 to 17 cents lower at 538 to 580. Now, Illinois soybean processors' cash soybean bids were 16 cents lower at 1275 to 1294, with the basis steady at 6 to 25 over the March. Hypro soybean meal on a truck basis was offered at $458.30 to $468.30 a ton. That was $5.30 lower, with the basis steady at $35 to $45 over the March. Illinois corn processors' cash corn bids were 5 cents lower at $428 to $436, with the basis steady at option to 8 over the March. Illinois river barge loading elevators quoted their producer corn bids 4 cents lower at 419 to 430, with the basis one higher at 9 under to 2 over the March. Soybeans ended 13 to 16 cents lower at 1263 to 1278. The basis steady to 3 higher at 6 under to 9 over the March. New crop wheat prices were 17 cents lower, 535 to 545, with the basis steady to 15 to 25 under the March. East St. Louis barge loading terminal elevators placed their producer corn bids 4 cents lower at 446 to 448. These elevators lowered their soybean prices 16 to 21 cents with quotations of $13 to 1305. Soft wheat closed 14 to 15 cents lower at 577 to 587, and Milo ended the day 4 cents lower at 478 to 483. Now on to contract bids to producers for new crop delivery. In the northern and western part of the state, corn ranged from 401 to 417, and on soybeans 1047 to 1073. In the central part of the state, corn ranged from 405 to 417, and soybeans were 1062 to 1087. In the southern part of the state, corn was 405 to 427, and soybeans were 1063 to 1104. Wheat ranged from 519 to 545. That concludes our report. I'm Bob Reese with the U.S. and Illinois Department of Agriculture.
And here are your livestock future quotes from the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. February live cattle were 142.07, down 47 cents. April live cattle, 140.52, up 17 cents. June live cattle, 132.07, up 27 cents. January feeder cattle were 171.80, up 37 cents. March feeder cattle 169.22, up 85 cents. April feeder cattle 169.47, up 57 cents. February lean hogs were 86.52, up $1.25. April lean hogs 93.80, up 22 cents. May lean hogs 101.50, up 50 cents. Now time for your cash livestock report from the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
This is Bob Reese with the U.S. and Illinois Department of Agriculture bringing you Wednesday afternoon's livestock report. Starting with the Eastern Corn Belt Hog Report, calculations for a 200-pound pork carcass was 26 cents higher in the range of 77.14 to 81.50, with the weighted average carcass price of 77.73. From the Illinois Direct Sow Report, slaughter sows were trading steady with moderate demand for moderate offerings. U.S. 1 and 3 grade sows under 400 pounds were 42 to 48, 4 to 5 weights 43 to 54, 5 to 550 weights 50 to 56, and 550 and up 53 to 57. On the Illinois Direct Hog Trade, barrels and gilts at country buying points were trading steady, with moderate demand for moderate offerings ranging in price from $52 to $56. Receipts for Illinois hogs today total 10,206 head. And now from the United Producers Livestock Auction for Tuesday, January 28th, they had receipts of 380 head, and compared to last week, slaughter steers and heifers traded $7 to $8 higher. Slaughter Holstein steers traded $3.50 to $4 higher. Starting with the choice slaughter steers, they ranged in price from $146 up to $153.25. Select and choice steers were $135 to $146. And choice slaughter Holstein steers were $126.25 to $139.50. Select and choice Holstein steers were $95. And choice heifers were $146.50 to $153. Select and choice heifers were $142 to $146. Now in the direct cattle trade from the National Daily Direct Slaughter Cattle Report, steers on a live basis traded at $145 to $147 and on a dress basis at $230. Heifers on a live basis traded at $147. And from the National Daily Pork FOB Plant Report, trading for retail and processing cuts was established with 406 loads traded. Calculations for a 200-pound pork carcass was $89.87, and that's 22 cents lower. From the National Box Beef Cutout Report, values for choice and select beef carcasses were trading lower. Choice carcasses were $231.81, and that was $3.99 lower, with select carcasses at $230.34, and that was $3.24 lower. For the estimated daily slaughter under federal inspection, cattle slaughter was estimated at 116,000. That compared to 119,000 last week and 121,000 a year ago. Hog slaughter was estimated at 374,000, which compared to 414,000 last week and 418,000 a year ago. That concludes our livestock report. This is Bob Reese with the U.S. and Illinois Department of Agriculture.
And here are your cash grain bids from Hog Inc. January and February corn delivered to Greenfield, $4.28. January and February corn delivered to Scottville, $4.19. January beans delivered to Greenfield or Scottville, $12.75. February beans delivered to Greenfield or Scottville, $12.74. January wheat delivered to Scottville, $5.51. Once again, their pre-opening prices are corn at Greenfield is $4.28, corn at Scottville is $4.19, beans at Greenfield or Scottville are $12.75, and wheat at Scottville is $5.51. With a vote of 251 to 166, the House approved the Agricultural Act of 2014 Wednesday. House Agriculture Committee Chairman Frank Lucas was obviously pleased with the bill's passage. He says it is legislation that all involved can be proud of because it fulfills the expectations of the American people for Congress to work together to find ways to reduce the cost of the federal government. Lucas says the Agricultural Act contributes major savings to deficit reduction, significant reforms to policy, and still provides a safety net for the production of American food and fiber, and to ensure Americans have enough food to eat. The Senate is expected to vote on the bill yet this week, where Lucas says he's hopeful the measure will enjoy the same success, as long as there is no objection. Senate Ag Committee Chair Debbie Stabenow said the Senate would likely take up the farm bill today. She is confident the Senate will pass the bill. Genetically modified organisms have been a bit of a hot topic lately, but mostly related to row crops, not really touching produce. Yet. Although GM technology will certainly play some role in the future of produce, there are some who do not think it will be a large role. Monsanto is developing new strains of produce that they are hoping will taste better and yield well, but they're doing it without GM technology. I spoke with David Stark, Vice President, Global Trades Partnerships, with Monsanto for more.
Well, first, traditional breeding is the backbone of every seed we sell. It always has been, and I suspect it always will be. And in the produce area, we are focused on using all of our breeding tools to help the farmer with productivity and also the consumer with having products that they just enjoy eating more.
Well, everybody loves products that they enjoy eating. Can you go ahead and tell me a bit about these different produce varieties?
Sure. So, we're not compromising performance on the farm. So I want to make that really clear to people that yield and disease tolerance and all the aspects that the grower needs to produce a profitable crop have to be in the seed. So this is not a trade-off. But when it comes to flavor, we've hired sensory scientists. We have sensory labs, and we're digging into what is the molecular level of what people like and they don't like. I can give you some examples of products. So melons. So here in the Midwest, I am perpetually disappointed, it seems, with the lack of flavor in our melons, especially this time of the year. And there's really no reason for it. We have looked into our global melon portfolio, and we have a whole host of flavors and aromas that we sell in different parts of the world, but we don't make available here. Well, that's changing. So, for example, a number of retailers, including Sam's Club, we have a melon that is available in the winter. It's called the Melorange, and it's unique in that it can be grown in Central America and shipped and have the shelf life that we need to get it here, but it still develops great flavor and aroma. It is actually a delicious melon.
I know exactly what you mean by being a bit disappointed in the melons this time of year. I know I just kind of stop buying until summer again.
Yes, and if we look at melon consumption, you and I are like an awful lot of people out there because melon consumption drops like a rock when the flavor resembles a rock. So there's no reason for it. So our scientists have discovered what it is about the melon that gives good flavor and aroma and how to breed that into melons that can be available year-round. So I'm really excited about the number of new melon types that people can enjoy, not just in the summer.
It definitely sounds interesting, and it may be if these different types of produce that taste better and these tastier fruits are available all year round, people will eat more fruit and eat healthier foods.
Well, that's really the objective, and we do want people to eat more fruits and vegetables, but we look at all of the programs that have been out there for years and the money spent to tell people eat more fruits and vegetables, and we see that per person fruit and vegetable consumption generally has declined over the last 10 years. So I think it's the product, and it's the convenience and the taste. It's not the understanding that I need to eat more. It's, make it fun to eat.
So these different types of produce are going to be tastier, but without sacrificing anything for the farmer that's going to be growing them?
Yes, and that's really important because we have, and the whole industry has things that they've offered for years that taste good, but if they don't yield well, they become really high-priced, specialty niche products that most people aren't going to see or want to purchase. So we have to make the flavor and the productivity so that the produce is widely available and affordable, part of the whole package, and that's really important to us.
And why have you decided to use crossbreeding and go along more those traditional breeding strains? I know you said that's always the foundation of everything you do, which makes sense, but it sounds like creating GMO crops, it makes things easier. So why have you decided to kind of just go along with more the traditional breeding of plants instead of inserting traits that could make these plants more efficient or more resistant to different things?
It's what most people won't see is that back in the 1990s, when we were rapidly investing in the biotechnology or GMO techniques, we were also investing in techniques that helped us breed smarter and faster. And when we entered the vegetable seed business around 2005, we saw a great opportunity to apply these tools to produce crops where we could make a lot of gains faster and, frankly, a lot less expensive. GMO technology is something that, you know, we say it's about $100 million 10-year-plus bet. And so that means that it needs to be a big problem on a crop that's grown on a lot of acres, and it can't be solved any other way. And there are not many produce crops that are big enough where we could really justify that kind of investment.
So it's much more cost-effective.
It is much more cost-effective. And again, because produce generally had not had the benefit of the better breeding techniques with the different molecular markers and genomics and such that helps us cut time out of the process, we see we can make a lot of gains just doing the breeding. There are a lot of things we'd love to do with GM and produce, and there are things that I think growers would really like. For example, in tomatoes, viruses are a problem. We could engineer immunity to a whole host of viruses. Fungal diseases are a problem, bacterial diseases, but the cost is high. It's controversial, and from a business sense, we just don't see the return yet. But that doesn't mean that it will never happen, because there are examples of people working on GM produce.
One example of a produce area looking hard into GMO technology is a new potato from Simplot called Innate. Greg Martin reports on this GMO produce.
Snake River Sugar Company's Dwayne Grant says that GMO products are making a big impact on the food industry.
I've been involved in the biotech evolution for about the last 15 years. We have successfully transitioned to Roundup Ready sugar beets starting in 2006, and that's kind of what I'm here, I think, to tell the story about, is what happened in our industry, how did the marketplace respond as we transitioned from conventional beets, was there pushback, how did our producers respond?
He says that the transition to biotechnology has been taking place since 1997.
And it has been a steady growth globally in the adoption by farmers of biotechnology. Just a little under 500 million acres annually planted biotech crops. They're dominated by corn, soybeans, and cotton. You put sugar beets together with sunflower, alfalfa, rice. You could also add into there papaya. GM papaya dominate the Hawaiian papaya industry. The Hawaiian papaya industry would not exist.
And Grant says there are a lot of fruits and vegetables in the marketplace that depend on GM technology.
So the message here is, hey, potatoes aren't first. This is a very successful technology. It's moving forward. So, you know, that's the message. It's not just a Monsanto technology. It's not just a technology for high capital, very intensive ag for the Western world. This is a global technology. It's being adopted globally.
I'm Greg Martin.
So overall, a lot happening in the produce industry on both sides of the GMO debate. That's all for this morning's Farm Show. For WSMI, I'm Angela Besh. Thanks for tuning in.